Do you ever feel like you don't know where to start with volunteer training? Or if you do, is it hard to get everyone in the same place at the same time? Well, Ministry Grid makes it simple to train every volunteer and leader in your church. With a library of over 3,500 videos and 800 courses, you'll find training for every ministry area and leadership level, from volunteers to leaders to ministry directors. Ministry Grid's scope and sequence of training makes it easy to know who needs what training. And here's the best news of all. For the month of August, you can get unlimited access to Ministry Grid for your entire church for just $399 a year. And you're locked in every year after to this great price. If you want to take advantage of this incredible deal, just go to ministrygrid.com/podcast to get unlimited training for $399. Once again, that is ministrygrid.com/podcast.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel, here with real author of real books and co-host Chris Surratt. Chris, hey, welcome back.
I like being introduced as writing real books.
Yeah, you know, some people write fake books, some people write real books. I'm more of the fake book type.
Well, if you would ever finish your novel, you would have a real book.
I finished chapter 9 last night, at least rough draft. So I'm up to like 55,000 words, maybe. It's going to be great.
Wow. I have not written a book yet that was that long.
So this is as good a time as any to introduce our guest today, Janae White, who is the senior publicist for Brahman and Holman. Welcome back, Janae. You were with us last week.
I was. Thank you so much for having me back.
Could you get Brian a book deal?
She
knows people.
Send us a proposal, Brian.
She does know people.
I do happen to know people.
The reason I want to go ahead and bring Janae in is because my novel is set in the fictitious town of Argo, Kentucky.
Oh, wow. Here we are.
Which we would have that in common. Yeah, yeah. It always comes back. Chris loves that part of who I am.
Well, for me, pretty much every town outside of Louisville is fake. Because I have no idea what other towns exist in Kentucky.
So my Enneagram type, big reveal here is type 10, just Kentucky. That's it. You don't need anything else. Grew up there, went to college there. So anyway, welcome back, Janae.
Thank you for having me.
Time to move on, Chris says. So right. We are picking up from last week when we introduced this idea of the Enneagram and the types. We entreed this last week with a little bit of an overview and talked through the first four types, the reformer, the helper, the achiever, the individualist. If you missed that show, you can go back and catch that. But as we get started here, Janae, just real quickly, just tell us a little bit about the Enneagram, where it came from, and why you're so excited about it, why this generates so much energy for you for you.
Sure. So the Enneagram is an ancient personality typing system that says that all people fall into one of 9 types, and that they are one type from childhood, and though they mature as they go through life, they still identify with one type. And for each of those types in the Enneagram, that encompasses a core fear, a core motivation, a core longing. And it also takes into account maturity level. It takes into account how each type operates under stress and security. It can go a lot of different directions, but the real idea is that the Enneagram goes into the motivations for each person's behavior. So it's really your internal self. It's not as much about your exterior personality like other personality typing systems are. And I love the Enneagram because it's given me language to describe what I felt and how I've operated and why I'm motivated in the way that I am. And I definitely felt it, but didn't have the language to describe it. And so it's helped me personally, but also helped me understand others better and have better empathy for others. So I think in a small group setting like we're talking about here, it can just be an incredibly helpful tool for a leader.
And Chris, this is something that you've spent quite a bit of time in and something that you've incorporated into a lot of what you do as well. How does this intersect with group life as you see it?
Yeah, I think it's a huge benefit for group leaders and groups as a whole. And we talked about in the last episode about you don't have to necessarily say this is the Enneagram. And something that you definitely shouldn't do is type people. So you don't want to sit in your group and go, you gave that answer because you're a five, didn't you? But it helps you understand the group members better. It helps you understand where they're coming from, what their worldview is, why they reacted to a question in the way that they did, or, you know, it's helped me understand my wife better and my kids better. But definitely for groups, it's great. For our group, we had them do something you're not supposed to. So if you're listening to this, don't do it. But we had them take the test. You really should read the book. Figure out who you are on your own, but we did kind of a little online test, and it was just fun. Above everything else, everybody went, wow, I kind of see myself in this. I understand myself better. I understand other people in the group better. So it was fun conversation for us. And so when I do group trainings now, I talk about the Enneagram and how it can be helpful for group leaders. So if it is helpful to just bring the whole thing into your group and have everybody read the book, a great book for that is The Road Back to You by Ian Cron, because it's very simple to read. It gives like 20 characteristics of each type, and it's 9 types, and so it's easy to do that. If you want to bring the book in, that's great. Or if it just helps you understand yourself and your group members and kind of gives you that knowledge, that's great as well. So yeah, I've been wanting to do this show for months because I think it's a tool. It's a toolbox, you know, thing that you can have as a group leader, and it's going to help you be a better leader.
Well, let's pick it up where we left off last week. So, Janae, we got through the first 4 types, which type is a little misleading and probably not terminology like Chris is saying that you would use in an informal setting, but that's what they call them in the Enneagram format. Right. So we're picking up with type 5, which is the investigator.
Yes, the investigator.
So tell us a little bit about what we can expect in terms of these core motivations, fears, longings in an investigator.
Sure. So for the investigator, also sometimes called the researcher, their underlying fear is of being helpless, overwhelmed, and incapable of dealing with the world around them. And they are motivated to gain knowledge and to not rely on others, to be self-reliant, and to strive to become as knowledgeable as possible in all of their undertakings. So they are very curious. They're great learners. They often are in academia. They're very alert about the world around them and wanting to gain knowledge about it. And they're good at breaking down complex ideas and skills. They can be, when they're immature and trying to deal with all those things, they could be secretive. It's difficult for them to deal with their feelings. They can isolate themselves. But in a small group setting, I think a 5 can contribute a lot from a knowledge perspective. They are really there to learn. So they, I think, thrive. I was talking to one of my friends that's a 5, and he says that he really thrives when there's structure and when it's made clear that they are there to learn. He doesn't love some of the small groups that focus more on, you know, sharing your feelings or how you feel about a passage or, you know, what's going on, even though there's value in that. But he wants to get to the meat because that is something that he's driven by. So, Chris, does that resonate with you?
Chris,
our resident 5.
Talk to us.
This is so painful for me. I want to just go and isolate myself right now. We talked about if you read the book, the one that's the most painful is probably you. And this was the case for me. When I first read the book and took the test and I came out as a 5, I was like, no. So I took it again.
Anything with that.
I took it again. I was a 5. And as I've studied it and understood it, it's definitely who I am. The unhealthy side is painful to read, but the healthy side I love. I'm an investigator. It takes me months to buy something because I have to research every aspect of it, find out everything about it. I mean, if we're going to buy a car, we might as well start looking 3 years ahead of time because that's just who I am.
Yeah.
And I resonate with let's just get to the meat of the discussion in our group. And it's hard for me because I'm the group leader. So I'm the one who's kind of, you know, doing the questions. And for me, I want to skip past the icebreaker because that's fluff.
Right.
And I want to get to the meat of it, and I don't want to feel, I don't want to hear about your feelings. I don't care about your feelings. You know, that's the unhealthy side of me. Mm-hmm. But it's helped me as I've studied this to understand I need to take that time, mm-hmm. and I need to listen to people's feelings, and we need to do an icebreaker and the small talk and all that, because that contributes to the group life. And so even though it's painful, it has helped me be a better leader to understand that's who I am. And the healthy side of me, you know, goes to a seven and can be more spontaneous and all of that. And so I try to do that more. So, yeah, it's hard to hear, but it's also helpful as a leader to know who I am.
So Chris just referred, we talked about it in the last episode, but Chris just referred to another type within his type. And Janae, it wasn't, he said seven. And from what I recall from last week's show, it's one before, one after. So if you're a five, that would be a four or a six.
Those are your
right.
wings.
Can you pick up tendencies from other types or
right.
recognize that? How does that work?
So that's another nuance of the Enneagram that as you go deeper, you can get into. So there's the wings. And then I think what Chris is referring to was the stress and security numbers. And so the Enneagram, there's a circle and it has all of the 9 points and they all connect and have arrows that point to each other. So when you look at it and you see your number, so for Chris is a five, he would go towards a seven in security. So that means when he's feeling secure, when he's feeling safe, he takes on tendencies also of a seven. And then there'll be another number, I don't remember off the top of my head, for insecurity or stress. And when he's under stress at work or whatever the stress is that's on him, he will exhibit characteristics of another number.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of another nuance you can take with the Enneagram, but that is part of it and can be similar to wings and sharing characteristics.
Yep.
So Chris, I'm looking at a website, yourenneagramcoach.com. And according to this website, your core fear, this would be our own Chris Surratt, everyone.
Oh my goodness.
Ready? Your core fear is being annihilated, invaded, or not existing. Does that resonate? I mean, do you really
that
think about being annihilated?
I don't know that I use those words. But it is.
I really hope I don't get annihilated today.
I feel like
today.
We're Enneagram shaming him.
I know. Do not do this in your group, people. Do not do
this is what not to
and
do.
Listen, Brian's number's coming. So he's,
that's right. Buckle up, Brian. Two more numbers and we're going to get to you.
But to that, one of my fears is that it's unhealthy, but that people know too much about me. Mm. Like that's I want to hold on to that. So it's something as stupid as, I realized this the other day, like when I'm pulling up to a restaurant and there's a valet, and you have to use a valet. I turn off the radio because I don't want the valet to know what kind of music I listen to. That's stupid. It makes no sense, but it's something I do.
It's but it's just, wonderful.
It's
I
those
love
little
that
things
stuff, though.
That yeah. So let's move on.
So you could say that they're private. So that's a kinder way, or just a more general.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is pretty cool, though. This also says type five is a person who pulls back from the world and others to observe and prefers to live in their mind. But it goes on to say they may be wise, visionary, and knowledgeable, or abstract, eccentric, or an intellectual. So you can find all these things on, you can just Google it and all these mm-hmm. things come up and you can find all these things. And what I like about it so much is you get the ups and the downs, which is only fair.
Yeah. Every number has a healthy side. Every number has an unhealthy side. And Google is a five's best friend. Which I think if you have a five in your group and you're trying to figure out what your next Bible study is, or you know, that's a great task to maybe give them. Hey,
yes.
Can you do some research, find out a good Bible study that fits this topic that we're wanting to do? And a five will love that.
Yeah.
I'll go and research for hours.
All right. What comes after five but six? And on my notes, we have, without further ado, the loyalist.
The loyalist. That's right. So the core fear of a loyalist is that they are incapable of surviving on their own, and they really seek out support and direction from others. Their motivation is safety, security. They are in what we call in the Enneagram the fear triad, but they are very motivated by fear. But they are also very committed. They're loyal, as the name infers. They're very engaging. They're responsible. They're great group members. They're great citizens. And they are people that want to make sure people are safe. They're kind of thinking of worst case scenario, though you'll see the word anxious associated with this. They may not all struggle with a deeper level of anxiety, but they are worriers to some extent because they are worried about what could happen. But once they've thought through that, they feel safe. So you want to have a six in the room because they're thinking of all, they've already seen where all the exits in the building are. They know the escape plans. But in a small group, one of my friends that's a six was telling me that it's really important for her to feel that it's a safe place for her to share, and she can open up and be vulnerable and create a safe place for others. But first, she needs to feel that she is safe emotionally, and she can trust others in her group.
Yeah, as I thought about the six, and that's my wing, so okay. I tend to go okay. toward that. I'm very loyal and also have some of that anxious kind of tendencies. Yeah. I always want to sit with my back against the wall in a restaurant, yeah. you know, things like yeah. that. But a six is going to be very loyal to the group. And so when you have activities or whatever, they're going to probably show up. But making that group a safe space from day one, we do it mm-hmm. through a group covenant mm-hmm. where we say, you know, everything that's said here is going to stay here. This is a safe place. We're going to yes. love on each other. That's essential for a six.
Yes.
They need to know that from the beginning.
Absolutely. And they also love to, the knowledge is very important to them, similar to a five, because like you said, they could have a five wing and they want to come into a group being prepared. They don't want to be blindsided. They want to, if you're talking about a sermon, they're going to want to know what you're talking about. They really thrive when they feel prepared, and that is an element of that safety. But then if they're not prepared, then that just gives them more reason to worry about what are they going to say? How am I not going to be able to participate?
Yep.
They just don't like to be blindsided. They like to be in the know.
Yeah, one thing you don't want to do with a five and probably a six is call them out on a question that you're not sure that they know the answer to.
Yes.
That will make them not come back.
Right. And there are other numbers. There's probably a lot of numbers that don't like that, but especially for a six, that's going to be key. They're not the ones that are going to want to be put in a spot where they have to think on their feet.
No, it's okay to ask, you know, fives and six, but be pretty sure that it's more of a broad answer.
Right,
They're going to be able to answer that.
Sure,
so that's
sure.
good. Number six is the loyalist. So let's go to number seven, which is Brian's number.
Here we go, Brian.
The enthusiast.
The enthusiast.
On the onset, when I saw the enthusiast, I thought, hey, that's really cool. The rest of these guys have these negatives, but the enthusiast is going to be great. So, Janae,
here we go.
Tell us about it.
Let's open up.
Let's let the PhD in Enneagramology
my behalf. So these are the fun types. Whenever I look at a seven, I have also had the thought, Chris, you mentioned earlier, this is the type I want to be, which I'm just seeing it from the exterior. But so the underlying fear.
You are kidding me.
No. I think sevens are so fun.
Everyone wants to be a seven.
That's right. The seven's the cool number. It seems like for other numbers, the cool number on the Enneagram.
My youngest is a seven, and she's the life of the party.
Exactly. Yeah. They're the life of the party. They're fun. They're spontaneous. A lot of times they tend to be extroverted, though that's more of an external personality trait. They just are always fun and happy and joyful. But their underlying fear is that they have needs and desires that won't be met by others, so they have to go and pursue them themselves. Does that seem right, Brian? You're smiling.
You feeling this?
He's feeling it.
Now, I don't buy into the life of the party extrovert, but other people do.
Sure.
But
and that's more of an extrovert.
I don't see that.
Sure. That would be more of an external personality trait.
Yeah.
But their motivation is to push pain away. They want to avoid pain at all costs. So that's where they are seeking the fun experiences, the highs in life, the happiness.
But why am I singled out, really, for trying to avoid painful times? I mean, isn't that true of everybody?
Well, we all do it.
Wait a minute. Is that defensive? Am I living up to the seven?
Just keep talking, Brian. You're a great example.
Just keep going.
Well, a four, for example, is okay sitting with the pain. They need to be pulled out of that. So there are other numbers that just are okay with sitting there and need help getting out of that space.
That was a whole week ago. I don't remember that about the four.
And the five. What's interesting is the fives and sevens are actually similar in that way. The sevens want to escape the pain through moving on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the fives, we want to escape pain through our mind. And so we kind of dig into our intellectual side of that. But we all want to escape pain in some way.
Exactly. You can see that as a theme of escaping pain and then also finding worth and value. And all of the motivations and fears here for most of these numbers, it is they want to know their value is not by such and such. So the enthusiasts, they're fun people. They're great to have in a group. They're going to get people pumped up. They're people that others like to be around, also feel comfortable around. I lost where my train of thought with that. They can be impulsive or impatient sometimes, but are focusing on, need help focusing on worthwhile goals and achieving those goals, but I think could be great group members.
They can also, from my experience, get bored easily. Mm-hmm. So if the group is the same thing every single week, if you're not doing fun activities every once in a while, a seven can check out.
Yeah.
And may not be happy with the group. Brian, what, you feeling okay?
What about giving a seven responsibilities, leadership? Because I know one of the things that's an earmark of the enthusiast that I really noticed was the scattered part.
Mm. When I have sevens in my group, I usually assign them finding fun things for us to do.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to just do a Bible study every single week, especially during the summer. I have them plan out fun events, just being the fun. We had one group member, we called him the Dean of Fun, and he was a seven, and he loved it. You know, he came up with all the, sometimes he would do the icebreakers, and if we would do games, he would do those. But yeah, he just loved bringing life to the group.
Yeah, that's great. I was thinking about the icebreakers too. That can be a great way to use the seven's gifts in including people and bringing up the energy level. I think group leaders will also want to be cautious with that because there will be people that maybe can't match the energy of a seven right off. So trying to keep that balanced and just aware and cognizant of others in the group that may not resonate. Like I kind of think of like youth group games. It seems like a lot of youth group leaders could be a seven.
Yes.
And some of, you know, when you're in middle school and feeling awkward and sinking into your feelings, you have to be cognizant of where people are at for some of those icebreakers.
Yeah. So my wife is a one, Karen, and she said, she has told me that it's, and I think it's probably true of sevens, that just based on what I think I hear from people, mm-hmm. it is true that I can wear people out. Mm. She says, sometimes I just have trouble keeping up. And I don't really know what that means. And I guess I don't, and I should maybe follow up with a question instead of just going, But it's, why is it that it is, this has come up a couple of times, but why is it that the one that you get assigned is the one that you react to most, I want to say maybe negatively, or like what Chris said, it's the one that's most cringeworthy. What is it about that?
I think part of the reason, Brian, to your question of why do you have that cringeworthy feeling when you see, it's because you've been living with those feelings and that you, we know the worst of our own number. And so seeing that can be difficult and painful, but we're not seeing what everybody else sees and the incredible gifts that each number brings to the table. And just the way that how we're wired can contribute so much because other people are coming at it from different perspectives. So I think it can just be awkward to see what the deepest struggles that we have that are just laid out there. And other personality traits don't focus on that as much. So we may not be used to that when you get the test result and you're reading through it and just kind of mortified to see it on the screen or on the page. See, that's a common feeling.
What I have a tendency to do is just skip to the worst. So I skip over the positives because I think we take those for granted.
Yeah.
And so I hit to the worst, isolation. And, you know, all of that. And I'm like, oh, man, that sounds horrible.
Right.
But skipping over the intellectual and stuff that's good because we don't get that.
Right.
Not to belabor the point because this is kind of hitting this because I'm a type seven. But mm-hmm. I will say that this has been helpful. So I am, like Chris said, I'm a newbie to this. I was introduced to it like I've heard about it for some time, but I've just kind of become personally engaged really in the last like couple of months, mm-hmm. maybe even the last month. But whereas it's helped me, and this is where I would encourage group leaders and even group members out there is take it to task. Mm-hmm. When you look at the negatives, it doesn't mean you're negative because in all of these profiles, it gives like at your best and it gives the positives. And it's a way to understand yourself and it's a way to filter even the way that you react to certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so like for me, I've been able to say, oh, okay, so I'm reacting this way because in my core, I have this going on.
Yeah.
And it really has helped me grow as a person.
Right.
So I would encourage everyone, this is not a Bible.
Right.
This is not something to live by, but right. it is something that can help you just grow.
Absolutely.
And like you've used the term maturity a few times, mm-hmm. like a mature five mm-hmm. or a mature two, mm-hmm. and that would be the goal.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So we need to hit the last two here. We've got number eight. the challenger, and I think as the title kind of suggests, this can be a challenging person to have in your group.
Right.
Be a great person, but tell us a little bit about
That's right.
Eight.
So the core motivation of the challenger, the type 8, is they want to be self-reliant, they want to prove their strength and resist weakness, and they want to stay in control of the situation because their fear is being betrayed by others, being controlled while they're at the mercy of others, and they feel secure and okay with the environment as long as they feel in control of their circumstances. So eights have very powerful personalities. They can be great leaders. They are totally fine with taking charge of a situation, especially when others aren't stepping up. They have no problem doing that. They can be a little confrontational and intimidating to others because they are direct. They have no problem saying what's on their mind, and that can be an incredible strength. Sometimes that can come off as too direct or too critical or too dominating to others, but they have that kind of innate ability to do that. So they can use their strengths. They are really great at standing up for the underdog in the group, and they really advocate for those that they feel like are being, you know, betrayed, because that goes into their core fear. They can advocate for those that don't have a voice, and they are just great leaders because that is so core and natural to who they are. So I was talking to some of my friends that are an eight, and they said that what I thought was really interesting, because the eight does have such a strong personality, but they said that they can follow really well if they feel like they are being led. So if they're being led well, then they're not going to challenge your authority. They're not going to challenge your leadership, and they can, you know, exist in that space. But if they don't feel like someone's taking charge, then that's when they jump
in.
Fill
that vacuum.
That's right. They can fill that vacuum.
Yep.
And that's great. But for a leader with a different type of personality or wants to, you know, leave some open space in the room for others to jump in, that can be challenging for an eight.
Yeah. Eights can definitely be tough in a group setting, especially an unhealthy eight. And if you have somebody that's like that, don't challenge them in the moment, but set some time after the group, maybe set up coffee or ask them, and just kind of understand who they are and remind them again why the group exists and how you can help them bring their gifts to the group. So don't challenge them in that moment, but kind of do it outside of group time. But they can bring great insights. They are going to be the ones that will jump in and answer the question.
Yes.
So, you know, when there's that awkward moment when nobody's answering, an eight will step up.
That's right. They don't have a problem stepping up. They said, some of my friends said that in a group setting, something they always want others to know in really any setting is that we're not angry. We're not being aggressive. We're just saying what we think. We're just being direct. And so that can be really helpful in opening up a group conversational setting, whether they go first. But they also need to be aware of how that answer might appear to others. And sometimes the group leader can help deflate that or just kind of pivot or whatever needs to be done. But I think it's helpful to know that eights also similar to a six and a seven, but they also operate out of fear. So they need to know that they're in a trusted place and they can open up and be vulnerable, but that is very difficult for them.
Yep. And I've heard that two of the most misunderstood types with people is a male two. Because I think we expect helpers to be more female.
Especially in the Christian world.
In the Christian world,
that's a common mistype.
And then a female eight.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Can that's
be
really
misunderstood.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just understanding that is good. All right. So let's move to the last one. Wrap this up. Number nine, the peacemaker.
The peacemaker. These
we
are
all
just,
love the peacemakers.
I know. We love the nines in our life. I want some of their energy. I need to channel some of this. So their motivation is to create harmony in their environment, to avoid conflict, to avoid tension, and to keep things the way they are, to preserve them so that they don't upset others around them. Their fear is of loss and separation from others or becoming disconnected from those that they love and with the world around them. So as the name implies, they are very calm people. They want to keep the peace. They have a great capacity to empathize with others. And they also, similar to the threes, are very good at adapting to those around them. So they have that ability. But they can also kind of lose their sense of identity in adapting to others and kind of putting aside their core traits or who they are. So these, I mean, as you can expect, they can be great group members. At a weaker point, the nines can kind of, like I said, lose that sense of what they actually want because their needs are, they project other people's and they can kind of, like a two, do what anyone else needs them to do or be, and they can avoid conflict to a fault because they want to keep the peace. They would rather kind of be passive or handle things like that instead of directly addressing it. But I think in a group setting, they can just be very harmonious and they can do things to deflect others, or they can just be very caring friends and people in relationships.
Yeah. And nines can also shut down, right? In times of stress. Mm-hmm. And I think nines, a lot of times in group settings, will not say anything because they want to kind of keep the peace. But if you'll ask them directly their opinion, the insights are amazing.
Right, right. I mean,
sometimes they need to be drawn into the conversation and just recognizing, you know, kind of who they are and how they kind of process things, but then ask their opinion and they'll be a great contributing person to that discussion.
Right. Chris, in your experience, is that as easy as saying type nine, what do you think? Or are there more effective and more sensitive ways?
No, I think that's great. I think with a nine, just if you were a nine, Brian, I'd say, you know, Brian, what's your opinion on this? And that's enough for a nine, I think, to enter into the conversation.
The core lie that the nines have believed is that their opinion doesn't matter, their mm-hmm. essence or their presence in the world doesn't matter. And that's, man, that's a deep one. But I think just that act of asking them and telling them or showing them that their presence, their opinion does matter, even if it, and to divorce that from causing tension or caring too much about how, if that's going to disrupt the peace. Because a lot of times that fear is, it's a legitimate fear, but they often are overthinking that. It's not actually going to cause the tension that they think it does, but that's just one of their core fears.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've hit all nine.
We did it.
That was fun. Thanks, Janae.
Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully this is helpful
great.
To group leaders, understanding yourself and understanding the members in your group.
And remember that these all of these things are just tools. They are not defining things. They are designed to be helpful and not limiting. And I think, because I think sometimes we look at these and we take, it's not that we take them as too true about ourselves, but I think we take it too much to heart.
Right. And these fears, they don't define you. And so the fears, the motivations, these longings, you could fall into this type on the Enneagram scale, ultimately, hopefully understanding the Enneagram shows you that these don't define you. This isn't your only option.
Mm. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Group Answers, but we would love if you would subscribe to the show if you haven't already, and even better, give us a rating. Tell us how amazing Janae was on this episode. If you do, we might have her back, right, Brian?
We will have her back.
Okay,
we'll talk Enneagram again.
It doesn't even matter.
We'll talk Kentucky again,
Brian. We'll talk Kentucky basketball when the time is right.
That's right.
That may not happen.
Special episode coming soon.
We'll see. But
it's special edition.
That's right.
Leave us a comment. We'd love to hear what you think.
That's going
to
wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers podcast show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Charette. And thank you again, Janae.
Thank you.
Look forward to being with everyone again for a future installment of the Group Answers show.